still muted.
Good evening, and welcome to the Yellow Dogs. So nice to sit with you tonight. So sweet. Sweet, sweet, sweet. Before we get into our lesson tonight, I want to remind everyone that on November the 6th through the 9th, we're going to be a part of a retreat with the Austin Sangha, along with our friend Lisa, flying in from Missouri. So there's going to be five of us leading a four-day, three-night retreat at the Ancient Yoga Center, which is in Austin. Pardon?
Driftwood.
Yes, you're right. It is Driftwood. On the way out of Driftwood. Well, so everyone's invited, and I'll be continue sending out the reminders. I don't know, it's limited, but I don't know exactly how many it will hold. But anyway, so tonight is, why does a caged bird sing? And, of course, that's a beautiful and haunting question that Maya Angelou once asked. Why does the caged bird sing? Randy and I had the opportunity many years ago to hear there at SMU in person where she was just incredible. You know, she embodied her poetry, and so it was quite a scene. So this is what she says. She says, the bird, confined and limited, still sings. It sings not because it's free, but because it remembers freedom. It sings because something inside of it cannot be silenced. The longing to behold, to be seen, to be alive. Isn't that beautiful? And in a way, in many ways, that caged bird is us. Because we live in our own cages. It's set up that way. And cages of conditioning, cages of having to do it the same old because we don't know what to do with our habits because they're hard to break. So we live in our own cages of conditionings, of fear, expectations, or self-judgment. But yet something inside of us longs. Doesn't stop, even when you're an old woman like me, it doesn't stop. And that song is the sound of the heart, remembering the natural freedom we've forgotten. And so today or tonight we'll explore what it means to look deeply at ourselves, to befriend ourselves, to support one another, to rediscover stillness, and to let nature remind us of who we really are. So, in looking at ourselves, the Buddha invited us to get to know ourselves, whether we wanted to or not. That we are set up, if we want to meditate, it's all about knowing ourselves in a much more deeper stillness. But not knowing ourselves not as an idea, but a living reality. And the Buddha said, within this fathom-long body, with its perception and mind, lies the world. The origin of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path leading to the cessation of the world. So everything we need to understand about suffering and freedom exists right here within us. It's amazing. One package. But as we know, it's not always easy to look inward. We spent most of our time looking out, and that's okay. Now it's time to look within. And we often look at ourselves through the lens of our own criticisms and our comparisons and our shame. And we do that because we were taught that. We were conditioned to have those kinds of mind states. So what if we looked, and this comes from the Buddhist teachings, what if we looked with curiosity and compassion? What if we just had a little shift, not asking what's wrong with me, but what's right about me? I mean, other people can stand in front of you and tell you all the things, how beautiful you are, how wonderful it is to be with you and see you, but yet it somehow we close ourselves to ourselves. So what if we began to look with curiosity and compassion, and just not asking what's wrong with me, but what's right? And this is the beginning of befriending ourselves. Turning toward our experience with interest rather than resistance. Now, that interest, again, seems to be difficult at times because we are looking, if we're meditating, whether we want to or not, looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly within us, which we've been conditioned to ignore, and that's not easy. And so we begin through this meditation to turn toward our experience with interest rather than resistance. And befriending ourselves, isn't that interesting? Thich Nhat Hanh often said, you can't offer peace to others if you don't have peace in yourself. So when we learn to befriend ourselves, to be gentle with our fears, with all the things, with the whole range of human emotions and thoughts, we can remind ourselves to be gentle. Be gentle with ourselves, with our fears, with our doubts, with our aging, with our grief. And really, meditation teaches us to identify them. We can even name them when they start coming up. It takes practice. But again, the whole process of naming what's actually happening within, not only are we directly experiencing what's happening in our life and no other place, but it's precious. It's part of us. We can't just live happily with just part of ourselves. And it's scary to go within. And it takes a lot of courage. But really, with all the griefs that we may have, our doubts, our aging, and our grief, we discover, slowly but surely, we're not so different than anyone else. And that's one of the strong points of this practice. It is you directly experience our interconnectedness. It's not just coming from the mind. It's coming from an experience. And that's deep, deep humanity. And so we know that befriending ourselves doesn't mean indulging the ego. It means that we seeing clearly with the good, the bad, and the ugly. It means learning to sit beside our suffering. Oh, that's so hard. Oh, that's so, so hard. To sit beside our suffering. Or sit beside when we don't do it right. Or sit beside ourselves when things aren't going in the way we would like for things to go. So it's being with ourselves in a very intimate way that, for me, that's what meditation enabled. So we can be our own best friend and be kind to ourselves without needing to fix anything. Christian Neff, a author and also a meditator we've sat with for many, many years, did the research at the University of Texas and did the study on self-compassion. And she said, self-compassion is not self-esteem. It leads to greater emotional stability, motivation, and connection with others. It's finer than self-esteem. It's beyond the mind and the body that we touch when we're still and we're noticing what life is bringing us. So Kristen says self-compassion has three parts: mindfulness, common humanity, and kindness. Wow, do we not need that, especially now? Especially now. The hardest part of my life so far, I can say. And I had some trauma in my life in early years, like a lot of us have. A lot of trauma that was out of our care. So focusing on the many kindness you offer daily. It's noticing. It's noticing things about you that we've just kind of forgotten. And we can do it with using the acronym BRAIN, where we are recognizing actually what's going on inside and outside. And we're allowing it. We're not running from it to the TV or the book or the studies or to the rational mind. We're not running there. We're recognizing and we're allowing, and we are becoming very interested in the parts of us that we have just flat ignored. Because why? Well, I didn't know what to do with it. Myself. I didn't know how to hold being snarky. Have you ever been snarky? Well, you know, it's just snarky comes out for some of us. I'm not saying everyone, but we know snarky. And so, you know, I wish I could tell you that, no, I'm never snarky, but I am, and it gets called to my attention. But it's also good information. Okay, Nita, let's look at this. That is so unnecessary. You know, it's so unnecessary, and it's harmful. So, but remembering that we live in two worlds. We touch within meditation and lots of other parts of our lives, that there's this spaciousness that we definitely are connected to, but it's not always available. And we have the world with the mind and the body. And that spaciousness is beyond the mind and the body. So it's no wonder that we're so confused. Life is confusing. And then when, especially at the beginning, when you start hearing the Dharma, you just say, that couldn't be true. That sounds too crazy. Well, it's because the rational mind doesn't understand. It just flat doesn't understand. So if that's the only way of communicating to ourselves and to others, we're stuck. We're just stuck in the same old, and remembering, this is so important. I've really brought this into my own practice. Forgetting and remembering, that is who we are with the mind and the body. We remember, oh yeah, we forget. We remember, we forget. So if we set ourselves up to think that we're going to be remembering how spacious we are, well, we're not. It's not set up that way. We're in a dualistic society, a dualistic existence that we can distinguish, but it takes stillness, being quiet. It takes being with ourselves intimately in a closed way. I'm not telling you that I've completed that, but in and out. I know I go in and out of it. So the Dalai Lama says his practice is kindness. Randy, I've heard you say that too. My practice is kindness, and I can tell you after 57 years, it is his practice. And it's beautiful, and nothing's wrong with it. But he's not always kind. No. But not in a way that where we divorce. But it's in the same way of where I'm not kind sometimes. I'm not kind to him, and sometimes he's not kind to me. We try to keep it in the family. But again, to see what kindness is and not being kind, it's the same coin, but different sides. You can't have one without the other in the dualistic living. You just can't. So what do we do? Well, Randy and I have been taught to do what to do with our unkindness. And we've practiced throughout. We've had lots of years to practice. So we know when we're unkind. And so being kind is the right effort with wisdom, being the understanding that it's not always possible. That has to come into our practice somewhere. It just is a necessity for us to see the human part of us that is not perfected and will never ever be perfected. Well, how do you know that? Well, I don't, but I suspect the Dalai Lama knows, is probably the most human person I know. But to say that he does not experience the wide range of emotions and feelings within him as a human being, I think it'd be naive to say it doesn't come up. Because we don't have control over that. Doesn't come up, but he knows what to do with it. He doesn't hurt people with it. He doesn't hurt himself with it. And so we're not set up to be perfect. And really what I'm talking about, the modern language for what the Buddha calls metta, loving kindness. But again, we cannot leave ourselves out of it. And we need, listen to me, I'm sounding like we need to model that to our family, you know, model it to you know, who are the closest to us about when things honestly are going on inside and you're not at your best, you know. So an apology, and there's a whole range, you know, of what to do when you don't do it right. We learn that in elementary school. So having the willingness to offer goodwill to ourselves and others, it's going to be hard to work any other way, difficult. So supporting one another, we can't wake up alone. Now, we are born. When we're born, we're alone. When we die, we're alone. But we can't wake up alone. Buddha makes that quite clear. The Buddha said, spiritual friendship is the whole, W-H-O-L-E, of the holy life. And so when we support one another in practice, whether in Sangha or in family or people that work together, we mirror back our shared humanity. And sometimes, lots of times, we need others to help us hear our own song. In times of illness, stress, aging. So it's often the presence of another just listening to each other without trying to fix it, without trying to restore us. You know, and we're learning that. We're forgetting, and that's correct, and we're learning to do it. And so stillness and nature's influence, what does that have to do with it? Well, nature has always been a teacher of stillness. And when we walk among the trees or sit beside water, something inside of us settles. And we crave for that. And the wind doesn't hurry, the clouds don't argue, the birds sing, the deer roam around. And so the river simply moves around the stone. It's the presence of what is right in front of us. But it takes right effort too. Because if we know that, then the effort comes, well, maybe I'll be nice to myself and go to the woods. I mean, Maya Angelou knew that. And so modern studies show that time in nature lowers cortisol, reduces inflammation, improves mood, and enhances attention. So if we need a little bit of science, we have that too. It's good for us. Stillness is not in the absence of movement. It's in the presence of awareness. So can stillness be found in activity? Absolutely. So where is the only place that we find that stillness and that peace? It's within. And if we don't practice being within that space, then it maintains a hold on us that's not necessary. That's optional. That always blows my mind. It's optional. So how are we taking care of ourselves? Ask ourselves that. Because it invites honesty and it causes us to pause and ask, am I rested? Am I nourished? Am I listening to my body? my intuition? Am I listening to myself, my limits? So self-care, it really is not a luxury. It's a maintenance for the path of waking up. And recent studies show that consistent self-care, sleep, movement, meditation, connection, gratitude, directly impacts longevity. Somebody say it.
Longevity.
Thank you. Longevity. See, I need you. I need you. It impacts longevity, mood, and even our immune system. So as we tend to ourselves, we make it possible to tend to others. And so, may I end with, may I befriend myself with gentleness. May I care for this body, this mind, this heart. May I offer my presence to others as support. And may the song of my heart be a blessing to the world. Isn't that beautiful? Oh, it's gorgeous. And as I've been practicing lately, my Tibetan friends have taught me this, may the benefits of our practice tonight touch all beings, because that's one something that we don't quite understand too, is it is healing. As we're healing, everybody around us is healing. I've had more than one teacher say, if you want peace in the world, be peace. You know, if you want something out of the world, be it. Be it. So that's what we're all practicing. That's why we're here tonight. That's why we're among people who are doing the same thing. So with that, I'll stop. Thank you for listening. And Randy will come up. He's mostly kind. I just want you to know he's mostly kind.